What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They'll talk about the things they did that day. The land of life, the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown. 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 Rewind to SmackDown.
Hello and welcome everybody over at youtube.com/postwrestling and also people listening on our free podcast feed to tonight's edition of Rewind to SmackDown. My name is Wei Tang, joined here by Neil Flanagan. Hey, Neil.
Hello, Wei. Yes, despite the theme song, I'm not John. I won't be talking about the things I did today, but John will be talking about UFC 317 on Sunday, I believe, with Jack. So that will take up a big portion of this is tomorrow night.
Talking about Night of Champions with me first.
That's
before
right.
That because we'll be busy. We'll be back tomorrow after. Well, whenever Night of Champions ends, we're going to be going live at youtube.com/postwrestling. So do join us for that as we get all of our thoughts on that particular show. But if you're interested, if you're here with us right now, consider signing up to postwrestlingcafe.com where the XL edition of this show features a 30 plus minute news pack discussing the top stories of the day every single one of these episodes. And today Neil and I had a chance to discuss CM Punk and his very public apology for his blood money tweet directed towards The Miz many years ago. He appeared at the kickoff and prompted by a fan, decided to apologize both to that fan and to Saudi Arabia for this tweet. So we discuss everything that might entail and our personal opinions on, well, how a certain Phil Brooks might come across to the public after that. We also discussed the lengthy delay that SmackDown experienced on Netflix today, a 30-minute-plus delay due to technical difficulties impacting the gorilla position and also the production truck in there. So details on that and discussion on that. The decision to move SmackDown back to 2 hours is now official, and many people are celebrating. Some people are actually concerned about what this might mean for the tag division and the women's division. We discuss that in the XL edition as well. Also, Tony Hinchcliffe hosting another WWE roast style show during SummerSlam weekend. Roman Reigns being cast as Akuma in the Street Fighter movie, as well as some ratings news. So all of that in the XL edition, as well in the Post Wrestling Cafe. I was very, very pleased to be joined by Nate Milton and Chris from LA as we discussed Full Metal the Album, the latest in our series of Rwanda Ways covering WWE and also WCW entrance theme albums. Chris chose this particular one, focusing on the New Generation Stars released in 1995, talking about some of our favorite theme songs in Bret Hart, Diesel, Razor Ramon, quite the revelation for that one from us. Gold Dust, Psycho Sid, of course, With My Baby Tonight by Jeff Jarrett, and also the deep, insightful dive into the lyrics of Thorn in Your Eye, according to Spotify, that we had as well. So wanted to put people's attention to that. Also, Ironheart has returned. MCU Later is back for the latest Disney Plus series as Rich and WH talk about Ironheart and WH does not have very nice things to say about this particular show. Got to listen to it, and he and Rich have a bit of a difference of opinion, which is always really fun to listen to. So that's up at postwrestlingcafe.com. Without further ado, Neil, let's talk about tonight's edition of SmackDown, which aired at 1 p.m. Eastern time for international audiences, but at its usual time of 8 p.m. from this is Riyadh, the Kingdom Arena, which, I mean, I haven't seen an official number floating out there, but the capacity, as it's stated on Wikipedia, is 26,000. I've seen that number being floated around there. That's the capacity of the entire building. And with the screen that we saw tonight on SmackDown, I kind of find it hard to believe that they would have been able to fill the entire thing to capacity with a screen that large. But whatever the case, a lot of people were here for tonight's edition of SmackDown.
A lot of people there, yeah. But despite the one fan's sign saying that the show was sold out, I find that kind of hard to believe too, because particularly toward the end of the show, as we panned back, there seemed to be quite a lot of empty floor seating at the hard cam side. But anyway, yes, there was a decent, very decent crowd here.
Yeah, I mean, I could buy sellout depending on like how many tickets were actually on sale. Sure. But whether or not it's to, what, 26,000, don't know. Nonetheless, a lot of people were there, more than certainly a usual edition of SmackDown. And I think, you know, probably just continues to show maybe the thirst for WWE internationally. This set, Neil, when you first saw it, this is the set that we're obviously going to get for United Champions as well. But did you have any thoughts on this gargantuan, massive set that they had in Riyadh?
My thoughts were, holy shit, look at the size of that screen. It was absolutely ridiculous. Those entrance videos on that screen were kind of incredible looking. Yeah, I've got to say.
This was like among the biggest, like, pure LED screens I think I've ever seen at any sort of event, you know, including WWE's. It looked incredibly impressive and made all the entrances feel really, really great. And I think it comes at a time where it's sort of counter to like the TKO philosophy of like not having these sort of big stages in favor of, I guess, maximizing profits and fitting in as many chairs as you can to sell a ticket. So I was personally really happy to see like this return. And I think the audience was as well, from what little I've seen online. Yeah. Whatever reason, maybe.
Kind of amazing to see JC Mateo's Titantron, and you know, on this screen, something that they knocked up in an afternoon.
Yeah, a name that somebody just came up with, like from like a AI name generator being plastered up there on that giant screen. Yeah, interesting. So that is the massive set. We have Wade Barrett and Michael Cole on commentary here. And we start things off with Cody Rhodes. He's immediately interrupted and joined by Randy Orton, his opponent tomorrow for their King of the Ring match. And, you know, I don't know about you, Neil, but for me, I certainly notice as the years have gone by with Saudi Arabia and these crowds, these are crowds that have kind of evolved to become more and more like other international crowds. And that is for me to say that they become maybe more, for lack of a better word, smart crowds. You know, these initial shows at Saudi felt like they were very like the crowds that were just kind of there to like cheer along with whatever the show wanted. Now they're becoming a lot more like crowds in other parts of the world where they have a lot more like minds of their own. They're coming up with like more sort of unique chants. They're not just prone to play along, as I think was evidenced by the reaction to CM Punk at the kickoff. You know, these are people that aren't just there to like cheer for who they're supposed to. They are very aware of maybe the online discussions, and they're able to cheer for whoever they want to.
Yeah, they watch the product, these guys. I feel, and I say guys as well, because like it became a bit of a game for me, like where's Waldo or where's Wally, as we call it, to try and find female fans in this audience. Cultural thing, a Guardian thing, I don't know, but that was notable to me, but certainly a much younger skewing audience. When you think of the Greatest Royal Rumble, they had like this VIP sort of armchairs at ringside for that, and the crowd were incredibly muted. It was sort of polite clapping and people looking very uninterested. So if you go back to that first Saudi show, now you got sort of younger men in in football shirts sort of attire, and they're singing the songs. They're and at this point in the show, of course, none more so than here, where they're doing what they do, particularly internationally, and continue on with Cody's song and with Randy's song after it stops being played on the PA.
Yeah, I wonder like what these sort of decisions, where they ultimately come from, whether it's from the WWE urging like perhaps the people that are paying for the show, hey, it might not be the best idea to have like, you know, like these VIP couches in the front, because I don't think if ultimately these shows are meant to be advertising for like Saudi Arabia tourism, it ultimately helps them to not have a show that feels like you're drawing such a distinction between the haves and have nots, right? You want these shows to feel like everybody is having a good time and that these are like, you know, rabid fans that they can join. So I wonder what sort of like, if there is any sort of negotiation that takes place between like a WWE production and like a, you know, ultimately what Saudi Arabia wanted. But in terms of presentation, they've kind of like went through whatever friction to ultimately now present a show that feels very much like their other international shows, save for like a giant video screen.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say too, like you noted, Punk's reaction, and also as we'll get to, not afraid to chant shut the fuck up and whatnot as well. So fairly lively.
They know the word to every one of the theme songs for Cody and Randy Orton, and they just kind of like, you know, let that moment breathe to let these crowds sing along. We get a focus from the camera spotlighting a sign that read, "Haters said cancel, Riyadh said sold out," with three O's in there. So I think like the fact that somebody brought the sign there, sure, like, but the fact that the camera managed to focus on it, I think tells you a whole lot more about like what the WWE wants us to maybe see. And to me, this felt like a much of a sort of like, hey, like us against them sort of like mentality, as I think they're trying to promote.
Very much so. They certainly wanted us to see that sign because it was very heavily featured on camera.
Yeah, yeah. And let's kind of remind people, like much of the discussion about the cancellation of this show is not because of like, I think, the ongoing deal with Saudi Arabia. It was maybe at least some concern from certain audiences of, I guess the performers and also the crew flying in at a time when war was potentially happening over the airspace. So I don't know if exactly you should call those people haters, but listen, this is just, you know, a fan expressing his opinion, I guess, whatever. So Orton starts us off by saying that Cody versus Jay from Monday was one of the matches of the year and should be on people's end of year list. Did you watch the match? Did you have any opinion on whether or not?
I did watch the match. I thought it was very good for a Raw main event. The fact that this was brought up by Randy as kind of a, you know, God, there's something wrong if this match isn't in the conversation at the, well, I think he said come slammy time, you know, but I suppose we take that to mean match of the year conversations in December. It wasn't that for me. They showed clips of it too before Randy came out, and, you know, Wade Barrett was picking it up as well, called it an absolute barn burner and all this. So they were clearly on message here to put this match over. I didn't quite see it the way.
It was a very good match. I was impressed by it. Like, I thought it was one of the better Jey Uso matches. I think like whenever you're trying to promote something like this, it ultimately just makes people hypercritical of like whether or not the match was actually perfect or not. And anyway, just interesting and notable that he decided to focus on this. And you know what? A promotion should, you know, build up a match as something bigger than it actually was. So this is when the freeze happens, you know, and we get the "we'll be right back" graphic for about 30 minutes on a loop here. Now, we kind of discussed, you know, in our news discussion what exactly happened, but there appeared to be a power outage both to the production truck and also the gorilla position that necessitated a halt in production for this amount of time. Now, they did eventually come back with Orton and Cody to do something, and that involved Carmelo Hayes getting a crossroads. But then after that, I'm just kind of delaying as I'm trying to bring up the actual screen here. We get handheld recorded footage of the actual promo, which went on for about 5 minutes. And the content of this promo was keyed with a lower third graphic that also read, "The Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton segment experienced technical issues during the live recording from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Thank you for your patience." So an interesting different, like, you know, a dealing with a handling of a technical issue, one that clearly necessitated them using a different type of handheld camera just to get this on air. So the content of the promo basically had Orton saying that he would normally want Cody to win King of the Ring, but Orton needs this more for two reasons. One, to rectify his loss in the final of the King of the Ring last year to Gunther, and also to attain retribution for his loss to John Cena in front of his family. Orton says that there's nothing he won't do to leave Saudi with the crown. Cody says he remembers everything that's happened between Orton and Cody Rhodes, including his first night in the WWE where Orton slapped his dad across the face. But Cody says he's very grateful for Orton being his teacher, and he knows Orton needs this, but Cody needs it more. So he says that you will be King of the Ring. I will. Now, this is, you know, Neil, one of the bigger matches that I think they could promote between two of their roster members. You know, certainly two with a lot of history between the two, a lot of depth of storytelling that was possible, certainly. And I think it's almost somewhat unfortunate that we're only getting this one episode build to it because of, you know, the King of the Ring and us not knowing that this would be the matchup. But something also tells me that these two will probably face each other again in the future with maybe a bit more time and possibly with one of them being more of a full-on heel. Your thoughts on what the segment we did ultimately see?
I agree with you that I feel it's almost a shame that we didn't get something deeper with these two. They are legitimately friends and maintained their friendship while they were in different companies. You know, we know that Randy calls Cody the Code Man, and they're huge buddies. You know, so there's a lot they could mine into for a longer build to a match, but I also think, yes, of course they can do this another time. And I think, like you said, with a much stronger, instead of babyface dynamic, it would probably work better with somebody as the heel. That's much more likely to be Randy, I think, than Cody, but who knows what happens in the future. I think I broadly agree that it's kind of a pity that it's the result of a tournament rather than, you know, something else.
But I also think the fact that, like, it's happening at the end of the tournament is probably one of the only, like, believable ways you could justify having two baby faces face each other, right? So I don't dislike it, like, personally. I think it's almost like a teaser for what's to come, similar to, like, you know, like Cena and Punk's interaction in the chamber before actually getting, like, this sort of heated feud right now, right? Like, in modern professional wrestling storytelling, we see both from Tony Khan and also from Paul Levesque that, like, they're not really afraid to, like, burn the first one, or at least, like, mm-hmm. give you the first match here before ultimately giving you the pay-per-view match a little bit later on. Or I should say, like, you know, maybe the more serious match a bit later on. And with the amount of content they have to fill, I think it's probably a decent solution. We go to our first match of the evening. It is between JC Mateo and Jimmy Uso. First of all, we go to the back with Solo Sikoa, who says he wants to give Big Jim one more chance to come back to the family. So we get our the match in ring here. I thought this was ultimately a pretty typical match here, you know, dominated by JC Mateo. You had Cole mentioning Mateo being a former never open weight and IWGP tag champion in New Japan. Also, he gave a shout out to Taz as a comparison to JC Mateo. So, very interesting.
It was interesting because he mentioned pretty much all of Taz's stops along his career except for his current one.
That's right. Yes. Former ECW star, and that's about it. So Jimmy comes back, but he's distracted by Solo on the outside. This leads to tour of the island from Mateo to get the win in what I thought was a pretty average match, but maybe Randy Orton thought this was one of the matches of the year.
Come slammy season.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was much to this except for, you know, a build-up match for Solo versus Jacob tomorrow. So, that's the post-match, really.
Yeah, after the match here, Solo once again opens the invite to Jimmy, and Jimmy once again turns him down, slapping him in the face. This leads to a heel two-on-one attack, but out comes Jacob Fatu to make the big save for Big Jim, returning the favor. He hits a double jump moonsault to JC, and then he has a bit of a stare down with Jimmy, who shoves Jacob out of the way to attack Solo. So the lines are drawn. These two still won't hug each other, though, but they have now both helped each other, and we are close to getting an actual reunion now between cousins,
I guess. Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, something of an angle for Solo versus Jacob tomorrow in a match that no one thinks Solo Sikoa is winning. I guess maybe it teases Jimmy as, and there's interaction later in the show, teases Jimmy as backup if needed.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see, like, I'm very curious to see what sort of chemistry Jacob and Jimmy have on screen. We got a glimpse of it today, but we've never really seen the interactions between the two because they've always been kept apart. But, like, is the vibe there, you know? Like, because I think certainly Jacob has it. Jimmy needs it. And can he, you know, kind of tag along to maybe do something of note to make him a bit more of an interesting and appealing character by standing next to Jacob Fatu? I wonder. In the back, DIY is trying to rile up the rest of the tag division to help them become unified to stop the Wyatt Six, who are getting a tag title shot tonight against the Street Profits. They ask Aldis why the Wyatts are getting a tag title shot, and Aldis says, maybe I'll do something about it. And what he does about it is put DIY in a match tonight against Andrade and a partner of Andrade's choosing. So more to come on that later.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the movie starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Our next match.
Just noted way that Los Garza, and this may have been the case last week, and I missed it, but they were holding their AAA titles in this segment, which I thought was kind of notable. You know,
not only that, they ended up airing a video package showing highlights of their AAA tag title win at Triple Mania Regia. Cole pronounced it Regia. I mean, whatever. Like,
I know we should really be saying Triple A, shouldn't we? But
yeah, I'm not going to police it. So then we get our next match. It is for the United States Championship between champion Zelina Vega taking on challenger Julia. We do get a video package earlier here where Julia says in Japanese, the U.S. title means a lot to Zelina, but it means nothing to her. To Julia, it's just a stepping stone. Despite maybe how that sounds, and I know Pollock would have hated a line like that. I mean, for a heel, like I thought it was whatever, like, you know, I thought it was fine, actually, like almost like a good way of like building heat, like disrespecting this championship that to somebody else means so much.
There was an interesting creative choice there, you know, to say it's nothing but a stepping stone. I mean, it certainly doesn't do much for this new title.
Naito did the same with the IC championship. He treated that thing like shit. So Julia says that this title means nothing to her. It's just a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. This was more of a like a 90% Japanese promo for Julia, and with a cool like line in English at the end, which I thought she came across really well. You know, the nervousness I think is not really there, and I think the aura is totally being built up very well. Any thoughts on Julia so far?
Yeah, no, I think her presentation's been great. And like you said, any real nervousness or whatever seems to be already gone. And although it's an international crowd, that's, you know, always going to be a little different. You could hear their reaction only to this video package that they were cheering as soon as Julia appeared.
These are crowds that are very responsive to the Japanese talent here, as we'll discuss throughout the night. So we got Zelina Vega versus Julia for the U.S. Championship, and we know Zelina loves her cosplay. So she comes out here dressed as a king cobra.
Yeah.
Right?
Amazing hat.
Yeah, this comes full with like a giant snake's tail or body, I should say.
Yeah.
And a giant hat in the shape of a king cobra head. So
we're hot people. Way, would you wear this?
You know, I don't know where to get a hat like this, but yeah, so I'd walk around at home in my basement like this. I thought it was ridiculous looking, but I mean, it's wrestling, you know, everybody looks ridiculous. So this is, of course, Saudi Arabia, so it means full body suits for women. Very impressive looking entrances for the both of them with a giant screen. We start things off here with Zelina delivering a big moonsault to the floor, and she starts selling her knees upon landing. After we get a commercial break with Julia in control, Zelina goes for Meteora to Julia against the rope, steps, further favoring her knee. They go up top. Julia looks like she's about to deliver a double underhook suplex, and from the angle that they showed us, it looked like Vega just made the rotation, but it might have just been the angle. Vega eventually hits Code Red, but Julia is over-rotated on the cover, and she's able to barely reach the ropes to break the count. Vega misses a moonsault. Julia hits a pair of knees, followed by the Northern Lights bomb as we get a title change here, the first of the weekend here. This match, I didn't think was the most pretty at times. Looked like a bit of blood in Julia's mouth as well coming off of this. But I thought the reception to Julia winning was very strong. I thought the aura surrounding Julia was very strong. What were your thoughts on the match and maybe your assessment of Zelina Vega as a U.S. champion?
I agree with you on the match. My notes are about, you know, in the round, I thought this was a pretty bad match. Poor flow, janky moves, loose strikes that were inches from their target, and perhaps a little bit of poor chemistry just generally. I wouldn't be surprised if they would want a do-over, and I wouldn't be surprised if they get a do-over just to solidify Julia, you know, with another win. So from that point of view, I didn't love the match. You know, I think that Julia had to more or less throw herself into the steps on the first go-round for that before the Meteora into the steps. There were, you know, I could pick other things apart. But to your point, the crowd really reacted to Julia right from the video package, never mind the entrance, to the win. And I think that's what gets, you know, the talent over in the round. As for Zelina's run, well, it clearly meant a lot to her. You know, she, on the night she won, was in legitimate tears, and then she took the championship to her father's memorial at the 9/11 memorial and so on. I think this run at 60 odd days or whatever happened to be, surely meant a lot to her. I think if you want to say nice things about it, it probably moved the belt away from the comedy scene. I really like Chelsea Green, but her run kind of pigeonholed the belt as belonging to the sort of comedy segments. So it kind of moved it away from that. I think Julia will give it even more legitimacy.
Certainly, yeah. I think ultimately I would classify the Vega run and like attempt to brand her as a serious wrestler somewhat disappointing. And certainly, like, it felt like she and also maybe the company had something to prove to show that she's more than just a manager. And I think, like, she's shown that she's very capable in ring. But I also don't think she's she's at the level of at the very high standard that we've come to expect from the division today, at least like of the standard that we've come to expect from the champions of the divisions, you know, of today, whether that be, you know, from NXT over to these mid-tier titles on the main roster. Like, these are standards being set by an Io Sky or Stephanie McCair or Julia. And I think, though, despite that, the biggest problem for Zelina Vega was the lack of connection to whatever character she was trying to portray. Like, yeah, you mentioned, like, the things that we saw of her, like, being very emotional about winning. A lot of that was told online. A lot of that was not told through what we saw on screen. Ultimately, what we saw on screen amounted to, I'm short. And that sucked, you know? She even has complained about maybe a lack of like airtime and a lack of ability, like airtime to cut promos, as like something that's kind of hindered her run. I'll also say, though, like what airtime we did get from her didn't really build to a whole lot. So I don't know how much like that would have changed things entirely, but certainly I would have gone a much different direction to promote her as a babyface.
Yeah. I would like to have seen her much more as yes, she's undersized or whatever, you know, but there's just the incredible sort of fiery sort of nature of an underdog character like that who can still win. You only have to look, you know, at this can be done, you know. Look at Rey Mysterio. Of course, I'm not putting Zelina Vega in a talent bracket of a Rey Mysterio, but the size thing just, you know, she was constantly being sort of denigrated for being small without ever really getting a proper comeback, and in promo time, it just, yeah, it was kind of poor. And everything that I referenced that I found affecting and good was not a product of creative. It was spontaneous tears and stuff that she was posting on social media.
Mm-hmm. As a heel, like, she was at her best, I think, to this day as Andrade's manager. Like, that was where she felt like she had the most edge. And I'm not like suggesting that she should only be a manager, but I think she still needs to develop that edge, especially as a babyface, you know, where honestly, she, from what we saw on screen, just kind of came across as a rather generic, like, you know, vanilla type of like champion. So hoping she can readjust now that she doesn't have the spotlight with the championship. Who would you feud Julia with as her first program?
It's a very good question, Mike. I'm not at all sure.
What match do you want to see in the division?
I noticed B-Fab was on this show. She got about 3 seconds of airtime backstage offering backup to the Street Profits and was clearly flown all the way here just to do that. I'm jesting when I mention her name because it's kind of part of my shtick is to be as a massive B-Fab fan. Who does Julia get a really legitimate, really good run with on a program with for this title? I'm not absolutely certain. Who do you think? I mean,
everybody's kind of tied up, right? You know, you have Charlotte and Alexa, who are probably like two of the bigger names that are kind of busy, seemingly like maybe forming a tag team with each other. You know, Chelsea's got the secret Hervis. Like, I could maybe see something along those lines. I can't really say I'm that excited about any of those particular matches. Meechan, you know, it looks like Meechan B-Fab. I could probably expect something around those two. Yeah.
I think so too, because like this women's division in SmackDown isn't that deep. So if you're really looking for somebody who's as good in ring as Julia, It's a tough ask. So yeah, I think maybe that's where they go.
And until you get like a Bianca Belair coming back, you know, like I don't know if there's exactly that sort of like loud matchup that screams, you know, especially with Julia now seemingly as a heel opposing a babyface. Okay, let's move on here as we discuss Alexa and Charlotte, who have an interaction in the back. Alexa helped Charlotte last week. Charlotte comes out this week and says she doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to be friends. Alexa says that she's not asking to be friends, but she wants to be allies of convenience, and which is, I guess, a wrestling version of like friends with benefits. So she tells she tells Charlotte to at least think about it, and Charlotte does. Wade Barrett then interviews Asuka and Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill says when people see Asuka, they get nervous. But when Jade sees her, she sees an opportunity to show people why she came here. She says this isn't pressure to her. It's purpose. Asuka then says, Jade is strong, but power isn't everything. Do you know who I am? I am Asuka. No one is ready for Asuka. With her usual Asuka flair. Honestly, I don't know if there's much depth of like meaning we're supposed to extract from either of the promos, but Asuka could have said anything and this crowd would have ate it up. They were reacting very strongly towards her, I would
say. Yeah, I saw a bit of chatter online about the booing of Jade Cargill here. I think to be charitable about it, and I feel like the benefit of the doubt is owed because that should be the default position. And I think it's more that they really loved Asuka rather than hated Jade Cargill. We saw it with, like you said, the Japanese talents seem to be really over, particularly the females on this show. They really liked Julia. They really liked Asuka. She got a huge pop as she came out. Recapped her entire promo, and they were cheering for that. And you know, everything that followed this as well. They were really into Asuka.
Well, like many international crowds, I think that, like, these are crowds that are full of like what seems to be like online fans, for lack of a better word, or like smart fans, people that recognize who are the true like in-ring talents versus maybe the people that are put into those positions that might not necessarily be deserving of those positions. And unfortunately, Jade Cargill, especially like after the past week's match, she's kind of receiving a bit of audience backlash in certain circles online for perhaps being undeserving of that sort of push. I'm just curious if that makes its way towards the match tomorrow, and if we get a very pro Asuka crowd and a Jade Cargill who's very likely to win, perhaps winning to a chorus of boos. It's very possible.
Very possible. If it's a similar sort of demographic crowd to what we had tonight, I would imagine that's exactly what will happen tomorrow.
Now, what might help her is the fact that this crowd was certainly booing a lot more for Naomi, who does show up to interrupt this segment. She says she has all the power to take it all away from Jade, like she took away the tag titles and like she took away the big three. This Saudi crowd starts chanting, shut the fuck up. So they are learning all of our bad words. Jade shoves Asuka away to swing at Jade, and Asuka returns by attacking and laying Jade out. So, you know, it will be very interesting to see if Naomi has a role tomorrow to especially like maybe, you know, mitigate some of the negative reaction towards Jade, because they are certainly booing Naomi more than they are anybody else in this segment. You have a prediction for this match?
I think Jade wins, because I still think the end result of, you know, Jade and Naomi being involved in a cash-in is a likelihood, put it that way. Mm.
We go to the back with Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce, and they allude to the fact that they're close to making a decision about the tag titles. So,
yeah, there's some sort of agreement in the offing on what to do with the women's tags.
Now, if it was as simple as like having Roxanne take Liv's place, I feel like that would be such an easy decision and quick decision that I don't know if they'd require this much like deliberation or at least this teasing of a bigger announcement. So
that's also what I fully expected them to do. So it's somewhat interesting, I guess,
for
probably the worst titles in this whole company, you know, to see what happens with them.
I'm just expecting another tournament, okay? Another set of qualifying matches to lead to something. Like, you know, I can truly see it. Maybe something culminating at Evolution or something like that. That will could very well ultimately end with, like, Roxanne and Raquel winning anyway. In comes Aleister Black, who wants a redo of something, but he's quickly interrupted by Ron Killings, who wants his rematch against John Cena. Truth says he's going to do something to get Cena's attention tonight as he walks off, and Black starts following Truth, continuing our tease of a feud between the two after Black's match was interrupted by Truth last week.
Yeah.
So there's that. DIY. Yeah. Any thoughts?
None. That's my bad.
Aleister Black and R-Truth, does it excite you?
Not really, no. And we get a small preview later in the show, which I guess we'll get to.
Our matchup next is DIY versus Andrade and his tag partner, Rey Fénix, who comes out. They had teamed together a few weeks ago against Los Garza. The crowd chants for Johnny Wrestling early on. So we don't see the spot, but Barrett informs us on commentary that Gargano suffered some sort of awkward landing over the top rope, landing on his shin on the top step. So Barrett appeared to be very concerned, describing Gargano as somebody who was hurting on the outside. Still, he was able to play his part, giving the advantage to Ciampa by pulling Andrade off the apron and joins back for the rest of the match and looked like he was fine enough, certainly, to continue. DIY then hit a flapjack codebreaker combo with Gargano doing a codebreaker on his injured knees. After the break, Gargano continues limping through the match, and by that point, it could be exaggerated selling, although I don't doubt he's probably still in some pain. Andrade goes for his usual moonsault spot, but he lands... he does this thing where, he does a moonsault and then does a double jump, standing moonsault to land on his opponent. Except this time, there seemed to be some spacing issue where Gargano rolled over. Mm-hmm. And Andrade nearly landed the moonsault, double stomping onto Gargano.
Yeah.
So he ultimately overshoots. And, of course, instead of going for the standing moonsault, he just goes to the cover. So a bit strange there. But despite that, this crowd was getting really hot for this match. Phoenix delivers a moonsault into a German suplex to Gargano for two. At this point, the crowd starts waving their cell phones and chanting chants I couldn't decipher. So either they were really hot for the Wyatts to come out, or they were replicating some sort of other chant from another sport or something. A bunch of big moves leading to near falls, and Phoenix hits the black fire driver, followed by the message from Andrade as the new tag team here between these two gets a win over DIY. Very good action in the match, very fast, modern pace, and ultimately just a good establisher for these two, injecting them into what feels like an ever-growing tag division.
An incredibly big tag division on this show, and as we alluded to during the XL portion at the beginning, perhaps something to worry about as SmackDown goes to 2 hours, how much time this huge tag division compared to the one on Raw will get. Is this going to be an ongoing thing with these two, Phoenix and Andrade? They were great tonight. I will say that I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was absolutely excellent. It was a crowd pleaser. It was built to be a crowd pleaser. It was sort of put me in mind of Black and Gold NXT and the way it was built up to the near falls and so on. And it really did capture the crowd who were doing whatever it was they were doing with their phones. And I'm just going to guess it's kind of their equivalent of This Is Awesome. Clearly the best match, I think, on this wrestling, the best in-ring match on the show by some distance.
You know, in the case of a Rey Fénix and Andrade, they both feel like they're guys that came into this company. I guess Andrade, he's been here for a year now.
Yeah.
But despite that, they both feel like guys that they just wanted to bring in from AEW that they ultimately didn't really have bigger plans for. And they weren't willing to necessarily interrupt their years, planned out storylines in order to fit them in. So it just feels like maybe the best for either of them is to place them into this tag division and to perhaps get them some sort of traction that way.
I would say particularly with Andrade, with Phoenix, at least he was kind of first sub for WrestleMania, to come in for Rey, for example. But yes, Penta got the VIP treatment. His brother, not so much, even though he's an incredibly spectacular in-ring performer. And this is easily the most I've seen out of Andrade in ring for ages. I can't remember the last time he even featured in a match of anything more than a couple of minutes or something like that.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling. At this point, R-Truth comes out to hijack the show, but instead of John Cena, it is Aleister Black who shows up, and he delivers a black mass to Ron Killings. He says, "I told you, Ron, not to drink from the cup, but I guess we're even now, Ron." So reaction was interesting for this. It wasn't necessarily loud cheers. It was kind of silent, and I don't know if that was just because the crowd either didn't care about it, or if they just like didn't know who exactly to boo or cheer for. Because I really do feel like it's a battle between two fan favorites. To me, like, Aleister Black comes in and he's just so cool that he feels very much to me like a babyface. But it's clear from this that they're trying to position him as a heel here against Ron Killings, who, I mean, just a few weeks ago was the hottest babyface on the entire show.
I agree with you, Way. Once he took the hoodie down, everyone was confirmed it's R-Truth. He got a big pop, big baby face pop for R-Truth. But then the he's behind you moment, like you said, this is a smart crowd. They like their workers. Aleister Black's kind of cool. I think they sort of didn't really know how to react to this angle. But it's clearly positioned by creative to be, you know, who's it? Truth is the baby face in this.
I just don't think the audience really wants to boo Aleister Black. I think they just see him as a cool baby face. So I think this was a very interesting choice. I would suggest maybe off mark, especially pairing these two. Would you say, Neil, that several weeks in now after the Cena match, his return and then the Cena match last week, do you feel like the Ron Killings hype is still there?
No, in a word. He's slipping down the card. This is where he's headed. Cena is not coming out for him. There may be a little more in the Cena run for R-Truth. There may not. But I think this is where he ultimately gets slotted in the mid-card.
I think it's over. I don't think he has really any sort of meaningful interaction with Cena. I think he just, from this point, becomes the guy who, you know, is kind of off on the sidelines chanting for Cena's attention, and Cena just kind of ignores him. I felt they brought Truth back to satisfy the fans, which, you know, I think was their only move by that point. They put him on TV now. It looks like he's building a feud with Aleister Black, so he does have a spot. But I also don't think they're willing to be inconvenienced enough to change their bigger plans to give him a principal leading role, which maybe at one point was what the audience wanted and was expecting from him.
Yeah, even this the rebranding effort that we kind of saw very early on of, like, he's Ron Killings now. Commentary very rarely say that, you know. And in the backstage segments, it's usually Truth this, Truth that. I suppose it trips off the tongue a little more easily. But I feel like this leverage that he had when he came back is kind of just slipping through everyone's fingers. But look, if he's getting a good payday and this is a good, like his son said, you know, big final run for the guy, then maybe it's not so bad. But yeah, I'm really slipping down the crowd in a way, or down the card in a way that Vince would have done. Again, I think we talked about this earlier on with Punk.
I just think it's wasted potential. I mean, okay, even if it was not a part of their plans, through their own actions by releasing this guy, they inadvertently created their next Daniel Bryan, you know, like a guy that the crowd just like suddenly really realized they wanted to see more of and that they really wanted to cheer. A month in, like how many weeks has it been since Money in the Bank?
Three
weeks in, like, he's just kind of back to being a mid-card guy, slightly above in seriousness, but like still not somebody that I think we're taking all that seriously anymore. And I don't even think he's supposed to be the main figure in this Aleister Black feud, because let's go to the next segment here. We go to the back. Aleister Black is in the back with Damian Priest. Priest says if Black feels tough after what he did to R-Truth, Black tells Priest that Truth can be told to stay away. And then Priest basically says, you should do it in front of his face next time. So big brother Damian Priest comes out in defense of little brother R-Truth. So I'm willing to think that this Truth thing is just a way for us to get the Black versus Priest, which, you know, is, I think, an admittedly much stronger program. But I don't know. I still have my doubts about, like, ultimately what they see for R-Truth. I think ultimately it's just probably a mid-card role, which he had before.
I agree. I think now that he's back, now that he's signed on the dotted line, our chief creative officer will do what he wants with R-Truth, and that's probably slot him a little lower.
It's all part of the show, right?
That's right.
At this point, Carmelo Hayes shows up, tells Priest to mind his own business with them, and Priest tells Melo to walk away. So maybe looks like a side program with Priest versus Melo here as well. And no Miz to be found, so I think we're completely done with that Melo don't Miz stuff.
I think so too, yeah. I just want to mention at this point, Wei, that before the Truth's taking to the ring, they had this Cena-Punk video, this yin and yang thing, which I'll try to fix my video.
Yeah, your camera's
narrated by Corey Graves.
Did you catch, right?
No.
Because they've aired this like both on Raw and also on SmackDown last week.
Okay, they aired the whole thing in full, and you guys have already talked about it. Yeah, so it doesn't need my input. I don't think it was, in fairness.
No, I was just thinking, wow, they must really love this yin yang stuff, because like they aired it three different times. Anyway, so as you try to fix your video, don't worry so much about it if you can't. But I'll just proceed here with the review. Okay, so we got the Street Profits taking on the Wyatt Six next. Ford says that they've had to wait 4 years to get these tag titles, so they're not going to lose them easily. And B-Fab says she's got their back if they need it. So we got the Wyatt Six taking on the Street Profits for the tag titles. Now, if you remember the last Wyatt Six match that took place on SmackDown, Dexter Lumis didn't exactly have the best night. You know, the several mess-ups, you could tell he was kind of being hard on himself towards the segment ending. And unfortunately, the things kind of pick up where they left off here, because Lumis early on goes for an early cover despite not being the legal man. So a bit of a blemish there. Yeah. And then there really wasn't a whole lot to the rest of this match, as the rest of the tag division shows up to be ringside, and including DIY, who just wrestled. Los Garza get involved, pulling Lumis out of the ring. Dawkins shoves Lumis into Garza, and Los Garza just end up attacking Dawkins, causing the DQ in a super lame and very uncreative finish. But the crowd perks up here for the for the big melee at the end. Rowan comes in, he cleans house. Refraxium and the Machine Guns team up to attack him. Uncle Howdy finally shows up. He delivers a Sister Abigail to Axiom. The Profits end it all by standing tall with dives onto everybody. In, God, I just thought a super lame way to bait and switch. Ultimately, like a tag team title match here between the Wyatt Six and the Profits. I think if you're so afraid to job the Wyatt Six, I just wouldn't put them in the match, because I think the crowd can start seeing through this sort of booking. And they're eventually just going to turn on like this act. I think it just overall weakens the division as well, which has really built its value on great, satisfying in-ring action up until this point.
Yeah, the crowd were checked out for this. I felt kind of checked out for this because it was low quality in-ring. I mean, I was more focused on commentary telling us that Dexter Lumis is a tortured artist, and you know, they're trying to give us some more lore for all of this stuff. And I'm not a fan of this presentation of the Wyatt Six, where my criticism of them originally was, I'm done with all this sort of spooky hocus pocus stuff where they can control the electricity and all the rest of it. And then they tried to find a middle way where, yeah, they've got that. The lights go out, the lights come back on. But then, you know, we're told their names and they've got to wrestle a match. And if they can't do that very well, then I don't really know what this group has beyond its aesthetic, which is admittedly makes for a really nice still photograph that you're showing on the screen for our YouTube viewers' way. But as an in-ring act, I just really don't particularly love this at all, particularly as you said, in a tag team division which is completely stacked, you know, and stacked with really good teams.
I also kind of hate to say it, but like I have to think that they might be reconsidering who to actually put in the tag team at this point. Like, it's very clear. Like, listen, everybody has off nights. Lumis has had like one notable one, and then like in this very short match, which probably isn't fair to just judge him on. Unfortunately, what little we did see didn't exactly make him look great either. And in a tag division that I think is being like built up for like great tag teams like Fraxia, Machine Guns,
yeah,
are Gacy and Lumis really the best option? I don't think it's crazy to say, like, I think Rowan is the most interesting performer, most dynamic performer of all of them. And so I have to think that he might be getting the sort of a replacement spot at some point, you know, in the near future.
I hope so. And like you said, not to prolong this agony, but it was just a complete mess with all of the tag teams out and dives onto everybody. And by this stage, the crowd seemed completely checked out as well of this, even, you know, for the crowd pleasing dives onto everyone.
So up next, we've got an interaction in the back with Jimmy Uso and Jacob Fatu. They both say that they didn't need each other's help, but they do say they have respect for each other. So Jacob tells him to get in where he fits in and he'll be all right. So very similar vibe, I guess, to the Alexa Charlotte thing. But in this case, it was just, I felt a lot more of like, you know, neither man really wanting to admit their true feelings for one another. You know how much they both want to hug it out, but they just don't want to be the first to do it. Either they're both too embarrassed.
Exactly. Yeah. Toxic masculinity here. But I did feel there was a little more chemistry between these two. And this is admittedly very short interaction. I thought there's some potential.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how them work that out. See what sort of unique wrinkle they can form between the two. So up next, we've got our women's championship here. This is a last woman standing match between Tiffany Stratton and Nia Jax. We start things off here with Stratton diving off the apron. Nia just lifts the steps in front of her landing, beginning the ref's count to 10. This match is mainly Nia dominating at this point, as Nia eventually splashes Tiffany through a table. Interesting to note, I don't know if you noticed, Neil, but no Slim Jim branded tables for the show.
I did.
Yeah. They are also not part of the center ring branding for the show. The only sponsor on the ring logo was Riyadh Season here. So we've seen up until this point, since they announced the Slim Jim sponsorship, every edition of SmackDown has had a Slim Jim table break, this one being the lone exception. So I wonder in these sort of instances if it's a request from the sponsor or if it's like one of the mandates of like these sort of Riyadh shows that they can only be the only thing. I wonder.
I doubt we'll ever see the fine print of the contract, but that's my assumption, is that like this show was bought and paid for by the Saudi government, essentially, or an arm of it. And I don't think they want anything but Riyadh Season, which is, I still don't really know what Riyadh Season is. I think every season is Riyadh Season.
It's just the government, isn't it? It's just the government's campaign to promote tourism.
It's like always Riyadh Season, I think is basically what we're meant to take from this. But that's they want that to be their only branding, I guess, you know. So yeah.
It could be that. But we are also talking about Slim Jim, who were the ones to maybe play a role in Vince McMahon's ousting as well. Like most of are the most aware and have
perhaps part of the contract with these other sponsors is bets are off the table when we're in Saudi, I'm afraid, you know. And maybe. I think I've noticed this before at Crown Jewel last year, when, you know, sponsorships were beginning to rack up, that they were kind of missing from the Prime, for example, which was always at that point in the center of the ring. That seems to have lapsed at this point. But for PLEs, it was always in the center of the ring. It was not for the Saudi show last year. So that's the best guess I have.
So we get back to the match here. Nia delivers her first annihilator, then goes up for another with a chair placed on Stratton's body. Stratton gets up at the count of 9. Nia then gets up to deliver a Samoan drop to Stratton through the table off the second rope, but instead Stratton counters with a powerbomb, sending Nia through the table, and they both get up at 9.5. At this point, Naomi's music hits and we get a cash-in attempt, but Stratton cuts her off before it's official, using the briefcase to eventually attack Nia, sending Nia off the apron through two tables. So this ends up putting Nia down for the 10 count as the Riyadh crowd counts in what I'm assuming was Arabic here to 10. Mm-hmm. I thought these two had a very physical match the last time, so I thought it was a strong idea to expand that to a full match here with the Last Standing Women's stipulation, especially with the cash-in tease. I think they continued to show really great chemistry together in this match. Naya, like, you know, continues to, I mean, to me, impress me with her ability to, like, show urgency in her wrestling, like a shark that smells blood in the water. The cash and tease I felt was ultimately pretty predictable, and to me, maybe not that believable or that exciting, but that's not to say they shouldn't have done it, because you should be continuing to establish Naomi as a threat, which I thought this delivered in.
I kind of assumed this was going to happen at some point in the match. I'm kind of glad it happened in the way that it did. I mean, we know that the holder of the briefcase gets, you know, squished, but beaten down, jobbed out, all the rest of it. It doesn't really hurt the Naomi character, not at least yet. And it provided another weapon in the match. I just chuckled to myself with pro wrestling logic is, of course, that the finish comes when two tables to cushion your fall is actually what leads to, you know,
of course,
you being counted out for 10. But yes, in the round, really good match, really physical match. They worked really, these two worked very well together, and there were no half measures here. It sort of went all out. And I agree with you about Nia Jax as well. I think has really come quite a long way since she returned.
Certainly.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, we've got Rewind Away going back to 2005 to review Vengeance featuring Triple H versus Batista in a Hell in a Cell match. John and Way are going to be reviewing F1 the movie starring Brad Pitt. And of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So, then we get our main event segment here. This is John Cena coming out. He comes out, says Punk is a loser, which the crowd loudly cheers, you know, very audibly. So maybe giving you a sense of like what they were starting off the segment with. But then comes Basic Thugonomics, which this crowd actually sings along to.
Okay? Yeah.
So these are longtime fans that are here in Riyadh here. And the words Punk Life show up on the giant screen as CM Punk shows up in his throwback Cubs gear. He's wearing a steel chain with the master lock on it and bracelets that read drug free, along with a backwards cap.
Yeah, Chicago Bulls cap.
Oh, Bulls cap. Okay, there you go. Yeah. So let's talk about this first of all, okay? Like, Punk has been receiving boos all weekend long, you know, from the kickoff to, like, whatever that apology was, to even this, at the beginning of this particular segment with John Cena's mentioning of his name. He comes out here looking like this, and I thought successfully diffused the situation, and I thought diffused any sort of, like, negativity that this crowd might have been, you know, like, had pent up sort of like anger ready to unleash on this guy. You know, this could have been the direction, like, despite maybe sort of any inkling of like reaction towards what Punk would have been, just given like the sort of like counter to the pipe bomb promo. But I thought it was a very smart one to, like, in like knowing how maybe tense this sort of situation was, if their attempt was to assure a good, friendly babyface reaction for Punk.
Okay. I wonder whether this was a deliberate, let's diffuse the tension that we know is there. We've seen it. We talk about this in the XL version at length with Punk. Before tonight, at some other events, at walkthroughs and so on, this smart crowd that we've referred to know all about the tweet and we're reacting negatively toward Punk. So yeah, wait, that's a good theory that maybe this is to make him look goofy, to diffuse this. I'm not convinced that this was supposed to be that. I'm not convinced this was, I think this was possibly meant to be like full of sick burns and a really good delivery of the bars that were clearly written for for Punk to deliver, and I guess we'll get to the rap itself. But, I mean, I don't know. He looked like an idiot. I've never seen this guy look older. I mean, Cena can still rock the, the baseball cap and jorts, maybe because he always has. But to see Punk come out in this garb and the drug-free knuckle rings and all of this stuff, I just thought he looked a complete fool.
I do think that was the intent. I mean, I think, okay, so he comes in here. The story is CM Punk doesn't want to go to Saudi Arabia, okay? But is he, because he considers whatever, because of whatever he said in the past. You have a crowd that I think like largely is negative towards him. I guess what's the best way of diffusing a tense situation but to like play the clown and make people laugh? And I mean, rather than, okay, was it an attempt to embarrass Punk? I mean, I don't know. I don't know about that. But like, was an attempt to, I think, diffuse this, the whatever negative tension there was, and to get people feeling maybe more light about like their feelings towards Punk. I kind of felt like that was at least a byproduct of things, you know? And I just felt like, okay, so he came out here, and you could tell like there was a reaction to him, and I think it was at best a mixed reaction. Well, at best a pro Punk reaction, at worst a mixed reaction.
Yeah,
you know, which is I think as much as we can expect here. This was a crowd that I think wanted to, at least a lot of them wanted to boo Punk, but because he looked so ridiculous and also so entertaining, I think the crowd was having a tough time booing him. So let's get into the actual segment itself, okay? So it's basic Thuganomics. He comes out. He says, this is basic Punkonomics. This clown plagiarized my pipe bomb, so now I'm stealing word life. You ripped me off to cut your best promo just to distract the fact that we see you move in slow-mo. You're like a Timu McLemore, but with Mac-a-less rhythm. He called me a player hater, but Cena's buried more talent than The Undertaker.
Ooh.
He lost all his respects, but I'd retire too if this place rehired my ex. If you never fixed your bald spot, you wouldn't be a wrestler. You'd be Boston Malkoff. Punk. Punk completely jambles these next lines. He says, yeah, he got good movie roles, but then we see Batista act, and then we see John ain't that.
Yeah, he fucked up that line, unfortunately, because it was one of the better ones.
Was it one of the better ones? I don't know. I don't know if Lamar could have made that one work.
They did. For a couple of these. He kind of flubbed the He Hires My Ex one as well. But this was, in fairness to him, I guess I will give him this. It's not on a teleprompter, and this is a lot. You know, some intrepid people out there have transcribed the entire thing, and it's a lot for somebody to remember.
Well, I assume he was practicing on the flight over here. He goes on to say that's not over. He says, you're like a fish belly white Hulk Hogan, but somehow more problematic. And I don't even know what he was rhyming with that. I didn't write it down. At this point, the crowd is largely filled with audible, loud CM Punk chants. Okay, so he was winning them over, or at least preventing the people who wanted to boo from booing. He says, I'm your vessel. Millions chant my name, and at you they chant, you can't wrestle. In 6 months, he won't have time for you little people. He'll be busy washing underwears for James Gunn. I'm sorry I didn't include the rhyme for that either. He's a superhero who works for DC. But no matter how hard you try, you'll still always be Marine to me. And that's straight to DVD. Better find a PS3, because those are the only DVD players that many of us still have. He says, I now understand you can't see me. Now it's all done. We all see you, and we're looking at a washed up bum. You're a leech. You're phony. You're a kiss ass. You get more. Before you go, one more wish to make. Tomorrow you're going to lose to Kendrick because, bitch, you're my Drake. Which, receives a very positive response internationally. So yeah. Anyway.
And then he drops the mic, of course.
He drops the mic, yeah. Okay. So your thoughts, first of all, on the overall content of the segment and how CM Punk came across.
This presented to us by commentary as verbal payback for last week. So, we're this is not sort of being produced by Vince for commentary to be rolling around laughing. It's really through any of this. I think Barrett at some point says he forgot how much he really liked the theme song for the Thugonomics character. But I don't know. I came away from this looking, just feeling Punk looks like a fool. He's not a good rapper. There were some sort of ooh lines in this presentation, but did they really land?
Was the point of this, like, was the success of this, like, segment based on whether or not Punk was a good rapper? Like, is that the intent?
Was it a success or was it embarrassing?
Well, what is considered success in this scenario, okay? Like, I kind of go back to, like, my grading of, like, what the pipe bomb was supposed to be. I don't think that was supposed to be a good pipe bomb. Like, oh, my God, how controversial he said this. I just thought it was meant to be, like, the idea of it was more of the meaning than the actual content itself. It was like Cena parroting, you know, the most famous promo in CM Punk's career, just as just a framework to deliver negativity towards his opponent. And I mean, this to me was just like a volley towards the other way, right? And I don't necessarily think like whether or not it was a good rap, should be like how we graded. Like, okay, I'm grading it by two metrics. One, was it entertaining? Was it captivating? Did it get people paying attention at least to the idea that these two are having a match tomorrow? I would say yes. Number two, in this scenario, did it prevent the Riyadh audience from booing their babyface challenger heading to the title match main event tomorrow? I would also say yes to both of those things. And so therefore, I consider this a success.
Okay, I get your logic way. For me, though, does this do any lasting harm to CM Punk, the character he, Phil Brooks, wants to project? And I think he takes that very seriously. I wonder how he feels tonight after that, whether he feels a bit humiliated from it all, whether he's just generally entertained and thought it was all a bit of fun, because we know he takes himself quite seriously. In the end, it's pro wrestling, two shows a week of several hours and PLEs and all the rest of it. This will be forgotten about, but it'll take a while to forget this. These visuals will be shown again and again. It was certainly successful this is very memorable. We're talking about it at length, still kind of trying to work out, you know, the genesis of this and all the rest of it. Was it an equal and opposite sort of reaction to last week? I don't know, because the pipe bomb is probably in his earlier run the most famous thing you associate with Punk. The Doctor of Thugonomics, is that what we really think of first? You know, when you think of John Cena, I'm not so sure. And Cena at least was able to kind of deliver something approaching an homage to the pipe bomb. This was really more, however it was intended to land, more sort of comedic and silly. And that was my reaction.
But that's what the Thugonomics like raps were. I mean, they were comedic, like, you know, they were just kind of like dunking on their opponents, right? Like a battle rap would, right?
Sure, but Punk, does he lend himself to that so easily?
Of course not. This is completely out of character for CM Punk. In many ways, I felt this was entirely cringy. Like, it was like, you know, seeing your dad, follow you to the rap concert and, like, all of a sudden maybe, joining you and your friend Cypher this was the most dad, like, CM Punk has ever come across. Like, looking like this, trying to be, hey, kids, you know? And again, like, I don't know how, if like Punk, I know Punk takes himself seriously, okay, and I know, like, he demands respect, and he might be, like, the last person to, like, want to do something like this. At the same time, I also recognize that I think he's joked enough about, like, his age that he recognizes he's in his dad phase. Like, he recognizes that he can't be, like, cool guy anymore, and I feel like he's comfortable maybe sacrificing some of that to just, like, be comfortable playing the clown, at least in this instance. That's the sense that I would have. But you do ask, like, a very good question. And I think overall, this entire build towards, like, Night of Champions, the question we should be asking coming out of it is, how much reputational damage lasts for CM Punk coming off of this weekend, both in terms of just, I think, the hardcore audience's, like, feelings towards whether or not he is truly, like, an ethical standard, and how much, like, authenticity there is in his morals as a result of working in Saudi Arabia, and, like, apologizing but without directly addressing, like, maybe the conflict that might exist, compared to, like, his words from way back. To doing a segment like this, how much reputational harm sticks with CM Punk coming off of this weekend?
It's a good question, and only time will tell. I feel this is very memorable, very memeable, very in-your-faceable, you know, as a retort to somebody. But also, it's part of the endless grind of professional wrestling. And the endless hours of content of professional wrestling, it'll probably be fairly quickly taken care of if there's a more serious angle. But I think another larger question to throw into the mix of all of this is that in Cena's retirement year, I would have expected the Punk Cena program to be a million times better than this and a million times more important than this feels. Who knows what happens at Night of Champions in that main event, assuming it is the main event. But
yeah,
I mean, I don't think anyone thinks Cena's losing the championship.
When you frame it like that, I mean, I'm in total agreement that, like, if you told me that, like, hey, CM Punk versus John Cena will be one of the feuds that we get, you know, to close off Cena's final run, I think, like, the image we have in all of our heads is something at least, like, resembling, you know, maybe some of the mystique that I think, you know, we think of from Money in the Bank 2011. I never thought the discussion would be CM Punk in Saudi Arabia, and how is he going to avoid a negative, you know, booing in Saudi Arabia? How is CM Punk going to apologize to Saudi Arabia? Yeah. And how is he going to do that via also dressing up in, you know, essentially like a clown outfit, making us laugh? I never thought in a million years this would be the feud that we've had. And it's a very far cry from, I think, the type of CM Punk that, you know, we wanted. Maybe we even had, you know, at the beginning of this year. So I can completely understand the disappointment. It's a very weird scenario that they've decided to place this match under. And whatever the reason may be that they decided to put Punk versus Cena in Riyadh, I mean, it's been really strange. It's kind of all I could really say about it.
It has. I mean, a charitable view would be they're taking a very long view. They want to get the most out of CM Punk, who's one of their most famous and over performers. They have half an eye on the fact that one of their biggest events in the Royal Rumble is taking place there next year. Maybe they want to rip the Band-Aid off all of this controversy. And if that takes a little bit of humiliation, then so be it. And, you know, that will pass. Maybe that, you know, that's a perfectly reasonable framing of all of this. But this is Friday, you know, in the moment, this is Friday night, and I'm thinking, well, what I saw on television, and thinking, what the fuck was
Neil,
that?
This is it exactly, ripping off the Band-Aid. This is like pouring, like, you know, or like whatever alcohol on the wound, making sure like you're like slowly peeling the Band-Aid off, because like if this
Add
was just
vinegar,
dude, if this was just the Rumble, okay, like he'd be one of 30 people entering the match, like he's in there probably doing a little bit of media, okay, maybe there's still some backlash towards it, but he wouldn't get this hyper focus, and it wouldn't necessarily be like a major part of the storyline the way it has, you know, he's in the main event. Okay, he's had to close these shows directly addressing this sort of thing in the air. So I don't know, man. Like, they're making a pretty big deal out of this, or at least the world is, you know.
It's been weird for sure. And I think it speaks to how much they want to please their Saudi, for want of a better word, paymasters. And I saw on WrestleNomics a graphic that demonstrated that, I think it's as of this weekend, they will have made more money. This company will have made historically more money from Saudi Arabia than every WrestleMania ever put together. And that's, of course, historically, they've only been going to Saudi since 2018? So, I mean, historically recently. So that is how important a good relationship with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is for TKO and WWE. And I feel if they have to throw Phil Brooks under the bus a little bit, as part of all of that, then they will do that with anyone, even one of their top people, and he'll just have to eat it. Because what's he going to do?
The reception to Punk tomorrow, I think, continues to be like an interesting question. Because despite like this tonight, what they ended up with, I don't completely discount a negative reaction ultimately for Punk tomorrow. So that'll be really interesting to see. It will be interesting to see how they curb that. Will they air the apology video again to the live crowd tomorrow? We'll hear about it, I'm sure. But those are our thoughts. Neil, thank you very much for joining me to talk about SmackDown. We will be continuing to discuss some feedback, maybe getting some predictions for Night of Champions as well. But at this point, we say goodbye to our audience on the free feed. Thank you guys for checking us out. Consider joining us for the XL edition in the Post Wrestling Cafe, or at the very least, checking out the bonus clip we have from our Post Wrestling Rewind Away with me, Nate Milton, Chris Ely, talking about WWF Full Metal. You can find that on the free feed right now, or a clip of our Razor Ramon discussion over at youtube.com/postwrestling. So thank you guys for joining us. Over to the cafe we go.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.